President Bush, but now President Bush sent Congress a $2.5 trillion budget plan today, speaking at the press conference after a cabinet meeting. He warned lawmakers to expect hard cuts.
It's a budget that focuses on results. Taxpayers of America don't want to spend any money to something that's not achieving results. It's a budget that reduces and eliminates redundancy. It's a budget that is a lean budget.
After a first term marked by rising budget shortfalls, the president started his second with a vow to cut the deficit in half by 2010. The new budget proposal contains deep cuts in domestic programs, from agricultural subsidies to literacy efforts, but it also notable for what it leaves out, like spending for Iraq and Afghanistan. Here with us now in Studio 3A is NPR's senior Washington editor, Ron Elving. Welcome back.
Hello, Joe.
So, Ron, you're going to make sense of all of this for us in about 18 minutes, right?
I think that might be overstating the promise just a little bit.
Seeing as I saw about a foot of high pile of documents on your desk earlier today, I think we can be sure there'll be a few things that we won't get to. But what does this say about the president's spending priority, this budget?
I think it says that the president's budget spending priorities are exactly what he promised in his campaign and in much of his first term. He wants to increase spending for defense about a nickel on the dollar, 5%. He wants homeland security spending to go up a little more than that, 7%. He wants to have a little increase in foreign aid to help buttress, really, the efforts that we're making against terrorism around the world, and also to give more money, for example, to the Palestinians. But the rest of the budget, the domestic spending in the budget overall, would actually go down. Now, that's not something that we've seen in a very long time in federal budgeting. If you take aside the military spending, the homeland security, and the foreign aid, if you look just at the discretionary side, this budget achieves a kind of almost balance, if you will, I mean, almost no increase, by actually cutting domestic spending, so that the overall increase is a little less than the anticipated rate of inflation. So in that sense, the president's quite right. It's a lean budget, and he gets there by cutting domestic spending and increasing spending on those other priorities.
Now, this is one of those, you know, those Washington kinds of questions, which is, of course, the natural, this is just the way things happen, but seem a little strange to the rest of the country. How do you put in a budget which has $2.57 trillion and then say, oh, by the way, that doesn't include some of the most important spending priorities I have, like money for the war in Iraq? What's that about?
Well, strictly speaking, the money for Iraq and Afghanistan is coming down as a supplemental appropriation, about $80 billion the president is asking for more, and the president will probably ask for more in a supplemental appropriation for Afghanistan and Iraq sometime late this year or in early next year. This is an ongoing commitment. It's $5 billion a month or more, and the president knows that by isolating money for this supplemental request, because these are extraordinary expenses because of this extraordinary commitment we've made in Iraq and Afghanistan, he knows that by isolating that, he can essentially eliminate the debate. There will be no debate over that money. It will just be spent. You saw what happened to John Kerry when he even had a hard time deciding whether he was going to vote for or against the last supplemental for Afghanistan and Iraq, which was that famous $88 billion that his quotation about was repeated endlessly in the campaign last year. Politically, everybody has to support it virtually, and virtually everyone will.
I'd like to invite our callers to join this conversation. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Or you can send us an email. Our address is totn@npr.org. And I'd be curious to see if anybody's, you know, feels that, you know, Ron Elving just said that the budget is actually going to be cut, the domestic discretionary spending, which is unusual. Does that make you feel like the president is following through on his promises to make a tight, lean budget? Or is he going to be cut? And maybe I should put this first to you, Ron. Is the cuts what you say in February, and then when it comes time to actually pay, you know, spend the money in October when the fiscal year starts, the money's all put back by Congress, and the president can say, you see, I was trying to be responsible, but those people in Congress won't let me.
I think the first thing to say is that while the president's budget is frequently compared to a blueprint, it could also be compared to a painting. In other words, it depicts reality, but with a generous role for imagination. The president's budget is not law. It's a proposal. Congress then acts upon it. Congress does its own thing. It exercises its own will. So when you come to Congress and say, we're going to zero out the subsidy to Amtrak, no more $1.2 billion for Amtrak, everybody in Congress who defends Amtrak, all the people who care about it, go to war. When you say you're going to take $600 billion out of agriculture subsidies over the next 10 years, everybody who cares about ag subsidies goes to war. And down the list, whether you're talking about community block development grants or any of the other things that stand to take a hit in this budget. And HUD, for example, Housing and Urban Development, takes as big a hit as Homeland Security gets an increase. So there are going to be wars in Congress, and not just with Democrats resisting the president, although many of them certainly will, but also among many Republicans, many of whom are believers in some of these programs and will fight for them.
Was there anything, I know you've only begun to plow through these documents, but was there anything in general terms that surprised you about this year's request?
I don't know that it was a literal surprise, but I think it is worth being surprised at that when we plan ahead for 5 years or 10 years, it is not incumbent on the president's planners to plan for things that are not yet law. We already talked about the Iraq supplemental. That's not yet law. They don't have to put it in there. Then there are things such as the Social Security overhaul that the president has made his top priority. That could have transition costs in fantastic amounts, $1 trillion, perhaps $2 trillion over a period of time. Some of that cost could begin to affect the budget within the out years of this budget. But, of course, it hasn't happened yet, so it's not in there. Lots of other things, prescription drugs under Medicare, fixing the alternative minimum tax and the income tax structure. These are things that cost billions of dollars, tens of billions, even hundreds of billions of dollars. We know they're out there. We know we're going to have to deal with them, but they're not figured into this budget because they're not law yet.
Now, this budget talks about, you talked about the real limits on spending, but we're still talking about a deficit budget. This budget, even going in, is planning to spend more money than the government knows or expects it will take in. So is this a surprise? Is this a bigger deficit than was expected? Give us some perspective on this deficit business.
Two ways to look at the deficit. In one sense, it's going up. In another sense, it's going down. let's talk about
Ron,
the sense.
That's the perfect Washington answer. Are you sure you're not thinking of running for something later today?
Well, in the All sense right. that it's going up to a record figure, well over $400 billion. It'll be the biggest dollar deficit we ever had in nominal dollars. In other words, dollars not in, adjusted for inflation. But because the economy is growing and growing, we're up to $12 trillion in the economy, the federal budget deficit is shrinking as a percentage of it. So in this particular instance, if the president's budget plans otherwise were to pan out, and of course we just talked about some of the things they don't necessarily envision, but if they were to pan out, the president's budgeters project that they would be reducing the deficit in real dollar terms, in actual dollar terms or in nominal dollar terms, coming down from that current $427 billion projection, a little bit next year, a little bit the next year. By 2010, they'd be down to a mere $207 billion deficit, half, which is exactly the amount, of course, the president promised in his campaign. He said, I'll cut the deficit in half. I have a plan to do that in 5 years. So that's what their goal is, and that's what everything is being bent to that purpose. Now, as a percentage of the gross domestic product, it's already coming down. That's the sense in which the budget deficit is getting smaller as a percentage of our overall national product. And in that sense, it would be down all the way to 1.5% by the year 2010. For purposes of comparison, the largest deficit under Ronald Reagan reached 6% of the gross domestic product.
Wow. So, and to continue our little economics lesson here, the deficit is not the debt. That's another whole thing, and that's another drain on the budget, which is one of those inflexible costs that have to be paid. Well, maybe you can explain it better than I.
Well, by definition, the more years you run an annual budget deficit, the larger the national debt becomes. Now, for a while back in the 90s, we were flirting with the concept of a surplus under President Clinton and with his Republican Congress. That Republican Congress didn't like him very much, and they didn't work very well together, but together they produced 4 years of surplus budget. If we had continued on that path, we could have actually been reducing the federal debt, the cumulative debt over all the years we've been a nation. Of course, we're going in the other direction now. We're adding $300, $400 billion a year. We are currently at a total debt, and now we're going to get into some really big numbers, $8 trillion. And by the end of this five-year projected budget we're talking about today, by the year 2010, that's projected to reach at least $11 trillion. But given some of these other factors we've been talking about, it's probably going to be a lot more than $11 trillion.
Well, let's listen to what some of our listeners make of all this. Let's first go to Glenn in San Antonio, Texas. Glenn, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Mr. Elving didn't point out the fact that Mr. Bush is making a choice. He's making these domestic cuts while still finalizing and making permanent these tax cuts that he wants to push through. If we put a sunset clause on these tax cuts, then we could probably find a way to balance the budget and have some domestic spending. And the second point I want to make is he's still kind of underestimating here the value of these slights with the supplemental budgets. Supplementals are for unforeseen issues. So I could understand in 2001 budget or 2002 budget, Iraq being unforeseen. But we now know, and we've committed to be there for several years, so this is no longer appropriate to make this spending under supplementals only for political and his fanciful accounting purposes.
Glenn, thanks very much for that call. What do you make of that, Ron?
Well, it certainly is easier to get it approved, I think, as a supplemental because you isolate it and because it gets Congress on the record as supporting that spending. Now, the caller's absolutely right. You can certainly anticipate Iraq's going to cost us some more money. There's no surprise in that. But the purpose of this is to highlight the spending and say, I've got Congress completely on my side here. We're not really fooling anybody. We're going out there and saying, I want $80 billion more for this war. If you don't like it, vote against it. And Congress feels the political heat as they have in the past. Some will vote against it, but we'll see what happens. I predict it's going to pass again. It always gets cast in terms of supporting the troops. Whether you like the war or hate the war, you find yourself in a position where you have to support the troops. As for the tax cuts, he's absolutely right. The tax cuts of 2001 and 2003 have a big effect on how much revenue is coming in. And if they're made permanent, which the president wants to do and Congress supports, that's going to have an enormous impact on what our federal government can do or consists of after the year 2010.
We're talking with senior Washington editor Ron Elving here in Studio 3A, and we're taking your calls. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's take a call now from Sue in Liverpool, New York. Sue, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for letting me get my 2 cents in.
Two cents is nothing given the budget numbers we're talking about.
Two billion cents.
Right.
I have a comment and a question.
Okay.
My comment is, I'm curious why nobody ever brings up the hypocrisy issue with Bush. This is a guy who's running around talking about building a culture of life. He gave child health plus benefits to fetuses, and yet I read he's going to make like $45 million worth of cuts in Medicaid, and the states are also cutting it back. And these are programs I know because I'm a person who depends on it. I have serious chronic illnesses. I have no other way to get health care, and I'm terrified. I'm curious, you know, why that's never mentioned, and if you know what kinds of things he's going to cut in Medicaid.
Well, probably, I don't know, Ron, do you have the specifics yet? I suspect that those will be coming out over the time.
It's emergent. And, of course, the federal government provides a great deal of the funding for Medicaid, which is health care for people who need it in terms of income, as opposed to Medicare, which is a program for the elderly. And Medicaid is also shared in terms of its expense and its rulemaking by the states. Now, the states have been sharing more and more of the burden relative to their other spending. There are several states now where they spend more money on Medicaid than they do on education. So the states are desperate, and they're turning to the feds for more money, and the feds are saying, no, in fact, we want to give you less.
Right.
So
what I'm terrified of is a recipient.
I can't offer a great deal of reassurance about where this is going because, as it appears now, you have two parents to the program, and both of them are abandoning, or I shouldn't say abandoning, I should say they're lessening their financial commitment to it at a point of critical need.
Sue, thanks very much for that call. Ron, let's talk about, I'm still intrigued. So we have this budget that's released today, this huge stack of documents. Who reads it? Seriously, is this going to go to, there's like 13 congressional committees with appropriations. How does it get, what happens next?
The next thing that happens is that the congressional budget process kicks in. Now, the president's budget authority goes back to the 1920s, and we've run through that process. Now we have the product. We have the result that you described. Then there is the 1974 Budget Act that the Congress operates under. It begins with a budget committee in the House and one in the Senate, and they talk about what the ideal spending levels and tax levels ought to be, and they produce a document, and they call it a blueprint, and it really is more of a blueprint than a painting, because now we're getting pretty specific and gritty, and it really does have some force of law. But really, the money gets appropriated and spent by the appropriations process, which is a third phase, and it goes way back in our history, back to the early days, and that's really where the rubber meets the road. The appropriations committees, and there are 13 of them, as you said, in the House and another 13 in the Senate, and they really decide how much money is going to get spent on all of these things, whether it's Amtrak or Medicaid or any of the rest of it. So for this particular caller or for any of the other people who are in one sense or another exposed to the effects of this process, that's really the effective point at which they should make their voices heard. The appropriations committees in the House and the Senate will decide how much money is spent.
Right. And then, of course, after they go through this whole process with the 13 bills, they can't agree on half of them or most of them. And so it all gets put into this giant omnibus package, which is so big that nobody ever really figures out what it all means until the following fiscal year when they go back to see it. Well, maybe I'm...
Well, nobody ever knows.
I've only got about 30 seconds.
Nobody knows what it all means.
Right.
All any of us can do is to dip in at strategic points and pull out the facts of a specific case and say, this is what matters to me.
Ron, just quickly, is there anything, I mean, how surprised should we be at the end of this whole process that how much influence is this president's document really going to have?
I think the document shows us how the president wants to go, and I think the election showed how much political force the president feels he has behind him. The question will be now whether or not Congress is entirely with him.
Okay, thanks very much for talking with us.
My pleasure, Joe.
Ron Elving is NPR's senior Washington editor, and he joined us here in Studio 3A. In Washington, I'm Joe Palca, NPR News.